These are the Target Files. Journey back with us between the 1970s and 1990s on a TARDIS nostalgia trip as we look back at the novelizations and audiobook releases of classic Doctor Who stories. Access Gallifreyan Archive. Subject: Time Lord known as the Doctor. Fifth incarnation. Target file title: 4 to Doomsday. Author: Terence Dix. Publication date: Earth Sol 3, year 1983. When the TARDIS happens to materialize on an alien spacecraft, the commander of the ship, the Reptilian Monarch, invites the Doctor and his companions to continue their journey to Earth in his company. Monarch's hospitality even extends to a generous offer. Although Adric finds this proposal extremely attractive, the Doctor has good reason to be suspicious of Monarch's motives. Hello, welcome to Doctor Who Target Files. This time we are discussing the fourth Doctor story, novelised by Terence Dix, after Terence Dudley's original script, 4 to Doomsday, along with the recent BBC audiobook release, read by Matthew Waterhouse. Hello, this is Mike in Swansea.
And hello, it's Alex in Exeter.
Based on Terence Dudley's script, novelised by Terence Dix, released in July 1983.
Well, I enjoyed it. I thought it was quite an interesting book. A monster you could sort of get behind and see their point of view, even though you sort of meet them from the beginnings, is quite different to what you normally get. The last one where we were slightly left to the end before we saw the monster. But I thought it was an interesting read. It had sort of good theory and sort of, you know, interesting ideas on what happens if you puts, you know, society on suspension for years and want them to come back. I did think it was a good read.
Excellent beginning, possibly slows down a bit in the middle and then picks up really towards the end. A very sort of cartoon-like ending, but I think it fits with the nature of the story, who the villain sort of eventually becomes and what sort of creature on Earth he reminds us of. Possible shades of the Master with the ending, without the idea of tissue compression, you know, shrinking people. Sorry for if it's a spoiler for anybody. Some excellent concepts, as you just said, Al. Excellent issues surrounding sort of android life. More existential ones like free will versus determinism. So, quite a few themes and concepts to discuss.
Yeah, I agree. There was loads going on in it, but it didn't seem to feel like some books can feel a bit stale and a bit slow in trying to deal with too much. There was lots of sort of questions about life and where are we in sort of android creation theory. And I thought it was really well written, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Terence has done a good job of sort of shrinking this down. I think this was 3 or 4 parts on TV. Sort of stutters a little bit on TV towards the middle, as the book does slightly for me. But I think he builds up well again towards the end, 128 pages in the mid-level of the target range. I think this is perhaps before Terence is moving towards the paint-by-numbers direct transfer of a story off the screen. It isn't one of the ones he scripted, of course, but I think he does a good job at keeping the narrative going.
I'd agree, but it's definitely one of his best. It's not a painting my numbers one, definitely. It has a good plot. But you know, does it work having that, you know, sign of the monster from the minute you sort of start the book? I think it, in some ways, does. In some ways, it sort of takes the problem out of the creature, makes the monster a bit too human, but that's what they're trying to be, I suppose, throughout this book. I think it's a good, slow, but not ridiculously slow way of drip-feeding information.
Yeah, he's a very sort of malevolent presence from the start, really, isn't he? Very sort of Monarch is the main character, the main bad guy. Mm. He's very sort of sleazy, isn't he? Very politician-like we've mentioned politics a lot lately in these podcasts. I think he's very reminiscent of one or two politicians around the world at the moment, isn't he, in terms of his power and his beliefs?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, we won't go into exactly who, but he has that sort of way of convincing people, you know, like politicians and spin doctors do. He reminded me a lot of Malcolm Tucker.
Yes, of course, yeah, there's a Doctor Who link there, of course, now, isn't there? Peter Capaldi?
Definitely, definitely.
I wonder if he'll be going back to that role now he's finished as the Doctor.
Well, we'll see on that front.
Concentrating again on the characters. Yeah, talking about the characters, Al Monarch, very sort of pompous character, very, well, full of false confidence, really, isn't he? You know, there's one piece of wording by Dix where he's very self-congratulatory, isn't he? You know, even when Monarch makes a mistake, it's written down as his opponent still had respect for him. You know, what a great sort of guy he must have been.
I know, he seems to have his own sort of, you know, internal beliefs that he's fantastic and will be a great leader by, you know, killing off the planet and all that. It seems to backfire on him, really, in the end.
Very reminiscent of somebody using one of the most powerful jobs in the world at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, most definitely. What we will see on that front, it's sort of very emphasis on somebody very important in power.
Yeah, I just hope we make the next. Hope we make the next edition before the apocalypse, folks.
God knows at the moment.
Notes about him: he comes across as a bit of a lazy dictator, really, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, most definitely. Relies on everybody around him to do jobs and sort of, you know, doing his duties and business to get things happening.
Yes, and then we of course have the first reveal of the android within the story.
It's a belonging or belong, isn't it?
Born or something? No, belonging.
I think it's belong or something like that. I thought it was quite a good title for it.
Very reminiscent of belonging. And how do you feel that reveal came across? I think it's a little bit dated, a little bit boring on television. Do you think it was any better in the book?
I thought it was quite good in the book. The way, you know, he sort of takes himself to bits and shows that he's just like three circuits and that's it, basically. I thought it was quite well written.
Yeah, very reminiscent of me of the TV scene in the 80s. It looks a bit dated now, but it's a decent enough reveal.
Yeah, I think it worked well in the book. I thought it was a bit slow in the TV version, but I think it was nicely fleshed out in the in the book.
Yeah, what did you make of the main team in this story? The Doctor, Adric, Nyssa, and Tegan, they all had a smaller part to play, didn't they? They managed to sort of flesh it out. So each of this sort of expanded TARDIS team at the moment, still one of the largest teams we've had on the ship, they all seem to get their moment in the story.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I think in the way it's written, it doesn't feel like they're all colliding in important parts separately, so I think it does work.
Detective team, isn't it? You have these various moments, like the Doctor faking the fact he's collapsed so one of his companions can get away when there's this general entertainment show going on.
Oh yeah, most definitely, that works. The way that, you know, Tegan can somehow manages to fly the TARDIS, and that helps. And I don't know if Adric sort of plays along with the with his sort of being controlled, I think.
Yeah, very sort of shades of grey to that moment, isn't there? You know, he seems to be in awe of Monarch, but as we discussed just before, Monarch is certainly somebody who likes to have his ego inflated, so definitely, as you just mentioned, Al, Adric plays along with that.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And I think in some ways the Doctor plays along with it once he knows how to play Monarch, really, and get rid of its influence on Adric.
So thinking of the other character, some very interesting cartoon-like concepts in terms of we get to find out Tegan's a talented artist. Don't her two of her creations actually come to life? You know, that's the power of Monarch within this story.
Oh yeah, that was a really good bit in the book, I thought, when she's not just an Australian girl, as I said, as a moan. I thought it was quite good. Nyssa had a lot more in her to do in this book, which sort of made her character a bit more interesting.
Yeah, you know, I do also, even in this book, tend to forget Nyssa a little bit. I think it's possibly something I've noticed more before. As we've said, she can be on the back burner a little amongst that expanded four-person TARDIS team.
Well, I suppose so, because he does seem to stick more with the Doctor in this book, where, you know, Tegan and Adric go off and have more of the adventure, really.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello there, this is Alex, and this is Who's News on March the 17th. Well, the first big thing of this week has been that BBC launched Everywhere in the World, a brand new trailer for season 10 of Doctor Who. It's starting to show us quite a bit more of what's going to come this season. Shots of Bill, and also more shots featuring Matt Lucas as Nardal, and lots of new aliens that are coming in this season. Doctor Who will be returning on Easter Saturday on April the 15th, and as soon as the episode's gone out in the UK, it will be shown around the world in theatres and on their own individual channels. At bigfinish.com this week, Torchwood Visiting Hours has been launched. It's a very interesting, scary story, apparently, about a care home. It stars Kai Erwin and Meris Hughes, and it's meant to be very good. It's getting very good reviews.
Coversal. Now, this one is in the era of photo covers. We had a lot of very good artists all throughout the target range, but unfortunately, for whatever reason, they started to use photo covers in the early 80s. As a description, there's just the one. It's never been republished with a different cover or illustrated until the audiobook released this month. So you have the Davis and Doctor Who logo in blue, almost half the cover with a red background, Four to Doomsday prominent white lettering, slightly smaller font Terence Dix, a picture of Monarch played by Stratford Johns in the TV show, sat at his throne, Peter Davison with a white outline around his head in front of him. Nothing to majorly write home about, you know, we do have Peter's image, I suppose, which wasn't always the case.
No, it's okay. Well, it is a little bit dull, to be honest.
It just looks like Peter Davison and a giant frog, really. Oops, no spoilers, folks. So not one of my favourite ones. But I think we should discuss, Al, because there's only the photo version, we should discuss the BBC audiobook cover. That? Yeah, they did do an illustration for this one.
That's a much better idea.
There we are. Yeah, red sort of computerised ship background. Just a very prominent picture of Monarch, really, with the McGann or Pertwee-esque logo in white. All white writing, Four to Doomsday, Terence Dix, smaller than the Doctor Who logo, read by Matthew Waterhouse at the moment. Yeah, a good front-on picture of Monarch standing there. His green scales are really sticking out. The big blue collar, gold embossed outside, is really sticking out, and the green of his shoulder blades, really. So
that sounds a lot better than the first one.
Yeah, it definitely shows him up as an alien. Possibly, I don't know if you'd say it suffers because it hasn't got the Doctor on it, but it does have Doctor Who in very prominent writing.
Well, I don't know, because, you know, do you purchase the thing for the monster or for the Doctor?
That's the thing, you know, it gets you intrigued, doesn't it? I'm not sure how many sort of new fans go and buy these Target release audiobooks, so we're all aware of Four to Doomsday, I suppose, the majority of us. But yeah, it does strike me well. It's drawn very well, very good. Likeness of Stratford John in the Urbanken makeup, I suppose, is the phrase, isn't it? Indeed. So yeah, you know, not a bad one. Very good effort on the.
Not too bad. I think the new version is definitely better than the first version.
Oh, yeah, absolutely! They beat the photos hands down, don't they? And they had this strange choice of picking photos, which didn't seem to have a heck of a lot to do with the story, and you miss out so much with photos, don't you? You know, you can really expand with the illustrations.
Yeah, definitely. Back then, you didn't have Photoshop, did you? So you couldn't really add anything to a photo.
Illustrations win hands down for me, folks, in terms of these target
totally
covers.
I always think they're better for book covers.
Released in the first week of this month was the BBC audiobook of a Four to Doomsday novelisation, performed by Adric actor Matthew Waterhouse. Al, your initial thoughts on the audio recording?
Surprisingly enjoyed it, because I had slight reservations with Matthew Waterhouse reading it, if he'd be able to get everybody's voice quite right, because he'd have a bit of a complicated TARDIS team, having to do Tegan's voice and having to get the right sort of level of breathiness for Peter's Doctor. I think he did very well, actually. It had quite a good pace, and it was well read, and I think reading his own books has helped there in the past, I think. But I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I found him to be quite improved from The Visitation, which was one of the very first books we reviewed on the Target Files. I think he had more emphasis, more of a feeling for the characters this time round. You just mentioned Peter's sort of breathy delivery. He holds back now and again, but he does bring the sort of nasal breath into it now and again. Did you find that worked for you well?
I did, actually. I think it's just the right sort of levels of, you know, being, obviously being around Peter's voice a lot, and it's like bouncy excitingness when it needed it, but otherwise when it didn't, it was just, I thought it was just right, actually.
I think he's going to hurry it up now and again, hasn't he, for Peter? Oh, yes.
I mean, it's all that breathiness, but it does work, I think. It's enjoyable.
We've wondered about performers before, you know, male performers doing female performing voices and females representing male characters. I think he did quite well, particularly on Tegan in this one. He really got a sort of dry delivery.
I think he did very well with Tegan on this, and the other sort of female androids, he got that sort of quite cold menace done really well. I thought he's obviously watched the performances, maybe watched the DVD and then tried to nail it. I think he did quite well, to be honest.
Yeah, his Nyssa didn't really stand out for me, but, you know, that's just... Nyssa again. I mean, I'm sorry, Sarah Sutton, you know, I'm sorry. Whoever invented her, whoever wrote her, first of all. She's very staid, isn't she? Very sort of boring as a character, I find.
This is why you need to go to the land of Big Finish, because they have taken that boring character and completely made it interesting. I would agree. In the sort of TV stuff and sometimes in the books, he's so dry.
Yeah, you know, we have met Sarah at Regenerations Con in Wales, and she's a lovely person, isn't she? You know, and she's another one who had a few years on TV, perhaps was sold a little bit short, and I know she took a long time away from acting, didn't she? But Big Finish has given her a new lease of life, as you said, Al, and I really do fancy hunting a few of those down now, hunting a few of those Fifth Doctor stories she appears in.
We didn't mention it in the news, but there's actually a new one coming out this month with... It has her as central companion. It's just her and Peter, and it looks and sounds very good.
Excellent. Another little plug for the Big Finish there. Absolutely. Keep up the fantastic work, folks. Keep up the fantastic work there, please. Big Finish.
Indeed.
Back to this BBC audiobook release, anyway.
But so, Nyssa, yeah, I would agree. Well, her voice can be tricky. But I didn't think it was too bad.
But the highlight of the story for me was his Monarch. I think Monarch just sticks out even more in this audiobook release than he does on TV. Really... You know, we already have the great, late, great Stratford Johns from Zedcar's fame back in the day. As Monarch in the TV story, you know, he stands out there. He's a very talented actor, but Matthew really goes for his characterisation here, doesn't he? He really puts the pomposity and the sense of hubris throughout, doesn't he?
Oh, most definitely. His Monarch is really, really good. It's powerful, and it's sort of, why is not everybody doing what I'm telling them to do? You know, I am the leader, and it comes over really well.
Yes, I mean, dying to make this joke, but he almost makes them come across as a right bunch of Urbankans, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
I wanted to make that joke. Sorry, folks, I couldn't resist it. I was looking for the right moment.
It's hilarious. But he is. He's a real nasty piece of work, and Matthew gets it over really well. I think, you know, he needs to play more villains, really. You know, seems to get into them.
And I think the narrative, the text is so good here that you don't really notice the sound effects, do you? You know, the music is used when it needs to be. The music is quite dynamic, quite reminiscent of the 80s of this synthesizer.
I really thought the music and the soundtrack were just right. It was sort of there when you needed it, but wasn't sort of too in your face.
Yeah, not invasive at all, as, you know, we've noticed on certain audiobook releases, haven't we?
Oh, definitely. There are some where it sort of completely takes over, where this was just about, right, it was there when you needed it, but, you know, end of chapters and big scenes, but I thought it was really good.
So, overall thoughts, Al, on For to Doomsday, the novelisation by Terence Dix, and the BBC audiobook release read by Matthew Waterhouse.
I think it's a very good book. It has good chapters. Everything seems to flow very well, and it has a lot of interesting issues. That's always the good thing about Doctor Who, taking a lot bigger and broader themes and sort of just adding the space opera fun around it, so you can sort of look into it more in depth for yourself. Yeah, I enjoyed the book. I think, you know, it's well written. It had good pace and had a good monster who you can sort of understand and see why he's like that. Don't know if it was wise having him from the start, because I'd probably like a little bit more build-up. Not like 9 chapters like we had in Paradise Towers, but maybe 2 or 3 where you didn't see him. Otherwise, I thought it was well written. Audiobook very well read by Matthew Waterhouse. He gets all the characters over well. especially the Doctor, Tegan and Monarch, who are really well done by him. So I'd probably give the book a 7 and the audiobook an 8, I think.
Yeah, fair enough scores, Al. Yeah, I did sort of enjoy the beginning of this. Tailed off a little towards the middle. Plenty of mystery. Perhaps the mystery was dragged out a little bit too long. But it picked up in pace again towards the end. Very sort of cartoon-like middle and ending, but that's not a criticism because Doctor Who can be anything from one week to the other. I thought your idea of a space opera was really well put, Al. You know, that sort of era of filmmaking was Star Wars, was Flash Gordon, wasn't it? You know, elements of both of that in this, I think.
Oh yeah, most definitely it has that sort of feel, something big and sort of vast out in space, what sort of doesn't have the purpose it should be having. And I agree, it has its moments of fun and the whole sort of saving the world with a very stupid ending. But I thought it sort of worked.
It does work, yeah. And it's actually quite nice we get a fairly happy ending as well, don't we? We have Tegan back in the TARDIS quite relaxed, and that's quite well written. And you get the whole ethos of Doctor Who in that the whole crew is looking forward to their next adventure.
Yeah, so it happens.
Can't remember what did come next. Was it the Visitation or
I think it is the Visitation, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's the ongoing theme is hinted at, isn't it, that Tegan wants to get back to her Heathrow again. And, you know, they have the issue of her rolling her eyes, don't you, and saying, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it, Doctor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so enjoyable. I've got to give my scores, really, getting digressing. Like you, I think 7.5 for the book in the paperback form. I'd go maybe an 8.59 for the audiobook, because I think Matthew did a really good job. And, you know, Monarch for me was the highlight. He really captured the pomposity of the character. Did a very good job with the fellow members of the TARDIS team. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this one. Al, how do you feel it stands up amongst the other ones we've covered in the Davison era?
In the Davison era, I think it's a good, strong one. I don't think it's as good as things like Earthshock. I did like it. I think it has faults, like you can see. It's a little bit silly in some places.
I think this will be an enjoyable one for a youngster, child, or, you know, late childhood, early teens to read, wouldn't it, in terms of the concepts within. I think it possibly tails off a little bit in the middle, but you could get through it in a day or two, or just one big session.
Oh yeah, most definitely. It does have that sort of fun element. It doesn't feel like some of them we've read where it can be a bit dry and you have to force yourself to continue. I think it would flow okay.
Yeah, so that's the latest release this month from BBC Audiobooks, guys. Four to Doomsday, read by Matthew Waterhouse. Next month, there is Mind of Evil, the Third Doctor story, read by Richard Franklin. And at least one release coming up of the Target novel audiobooks up to about October this year, and we've got a few of the big guns then, like Survival, the very last classic series story, and Great Genesis of the Daleks. So looking forward to those, Al.
Well, same here. Have any of those last two mentioned got readers yet? Because it isn't the last time I looked.
No, I don't think so. There's a lot of speculation, though. Perhaps somebody like... Let's talk about that, Al. Who would your ideal ones be for those stories? I think go for maybe John Culshaw. Maybe John Culshaw, or perhaps a Peter Miles who was in it, Genesis of the Daleks.
Yeah, definitely Culshaw, as he does, you know, for Tom Baker, and Nick Briggs will probably be involved somehow because Daleks.
Something like Survival, possibly, you know, Lisa Bowman, she was in the TV story.
I'd say Lisa Bowman would be great, Sophie would be great, or even if he doesn't seem to read anything, Syl would be fantastic.
I think Syl as well, yeah, you know, would be nice for Mr. McCoy to read a few. Would you possibly like to hear one of the newer Doctors who's worked for Big Finish, like Tennant, read one? Or maybe, I guess Capaldi will be signing up as soon as possible for Big Finish when he's done with the TV role. Would you like to hear those read in?
Nothing's been said yet, because they're doing this thing for the 9th, 10th and 11th, where it's sort of Red Chronicles, basically. It's Nick Briggs basically doing his outlook on those three Doctors. They haven't got any of them signed up yet.
We shall see, folks. We shall see.
But I think, like you, because Sylvester did do a lot of reading in the, you know, sort of late 80s with Jack and Ori and things like that. He was always great.
He did, didn't he, actually? Yeah, so it'd be nice to hear him read a book and see he's a performer as well, of course, how his performance would come across.
I think out of all the people, the most it probably means to is probably Lisa Bowman, so I expect it will be Lisa Bowman.
Yeah, and I can't remember. Has Peter Davison done many of these? He did a few on the Tales from the TARDIS abridged versions.
Well, he's done an F-Shock, hasn't he?
Yes.
Done Castle Valvo, I think.
Yeah, which we'll look at in the future again, folks.
Definitely, as we done. It's an interesting one.
But Fall to Doomsday, all in all, a good one, folks. Well recommended.
Oh, most definitely. And it's well worth getting from BBC Audiobooks, because it's a very good reading for Matthew Waters. I would personally put it, in the last couple of releases, maybe just behind Terror of Fang Rock.
Excellent. High praise indeed.
It's that good on the... Maybe Terror of Fang Rock has a better soundscape.
Yes.
But I'd say on audiobook reading, it's pretty close.
If you'd like to get in contact with Doctor Who Target Files team, tweet us at DW Target Files handle, or contact us on our Facebook page, search for Doctor Who Target Files Podcast. Thank you for listening.
Next time on the Target Files, we will be reviewing Doctor Who and the Abominable Snowman, book by Terence Dix, an audiobook read by David Troughton.
Doctor Who Target Files, Fall to Doomsday Review, featured Alexander Gibbons and Michael Winks. I Am the Doctor, originally composed by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by YouTube user RulingTerror42. Check out their channel. Nissa's theme, originally composed by Roger Lynn. Newsround opening and closing theme, originally composed by John Baker and by Ted Heath and his orchestra. No copyright infringement intended on any of the music used in this podcast. Doctor Who Target Files, Fall to Doomsday Review was recorded in Exeter, Devon, UK and Swansea, UK during March 2017.